Hello, grandkids, and welcome to Stunt Granny Audio 785. This is Kevin DeFrango. On the other end is Chris Calamita. What is up, good sir?
Not a heck of a lot, Kevin. How about yourself?
I just realized while doing this podcast, or starting to do this podcast, that I crammed a lot of wrestling into a short time period because I traveled this past weekend. Friday shows. When I go to my parents' house, you will be unsurprised to learn that we do not turn on professional wrestling and watch it with my parents. Does this come as surprising news to anyone?
No, probably not, though.
So I have jammed SmackDown and Raw into basically the same day. And it's a little bit of a jumble mess, not necessarily in a bad way, just in a, I definitely crammed in a lot of wrestling in a short time period. But yeah, that definitely cuts out things like AEW Rampage. Not on the priority list. I did see this lineup, though, and I thought for sure this was something that, I guess I just forgot to tape it, but Darby Allin and Sammy Guevara in a match seems somewhat attractive. Claudio Castagnoli versus Dax Harwood for the ROH Championship seems like it should be a good match. Serena Deeb versus Madison Rayne should be a fine women's match. And we get some Samoa Joe. Like, what's to argue with that? But, yeah, did not fit that into the old taping schedule this past week. Does any of that stuff interest you?
Maybe the ROH title match, but you know what? Good matches are it's unbelievable where we've gone. Where a four-star or so match on free TV is a dime a dozen at this point. So and thus skippable. And it's just one.
Yeah, it is pretty wild. The quality of matches that happens on TV on a regular basis is pretty wild these days. It is something that, as much as we bitch about storylines, I do feel like we acknowledge the fact that the wrestling is top-notch pretty much all the time these days. But with Triple H really letting some of these matches roll, I think it's really, like, I know that Vince still had some good matches every now and again, but I don't feel like he had the, like, Triple H is having these, like, it feels like his matches are, like, if you don't have an enhancement talent match, like, you're going 15 to 18 minutes. In Triple H land now. And yeah, that has really led to a boatload of good matches.
Yeah.
Because even something is, such as the opener for SmackDown, Imperium taking on the, are they called the Brawling Buddies still?
The Brawling Brutes.
The Brawling Brutes. I know that they call them that. The write-up doesn't have it in. But anyway, hey, at least the write-up I'm looking at, 19-minute match.
It was definitely a long match. They put in some time.
Yeah, this is a prime example of long matches in especially the WWE these days. I mean, because I feel like AEW definitely has had some longer matches
Oh, yes.
For its entire existence.
Yeah.
But yeah, WWE seems to have upped their game, and it's not really surprising. I mean, they have the people to be able to do such things currently. And this is definitely a fun group of six to have a match. I like all of them for the most part. I suppose Giovanni Vinci and Rich Holland are the most questionable of this six pack. But yeah, good stuff to start off SmackDown and to give Imperium a nice win over a team that is a little more established.
Yeah, no,
And
it was a good win for Imperium. Maybe I would have given it to the Brawling Brutes if we're continuing Sheamus and Gunther, which it does seem like we are, which is good because that was the only reservation I had with rating Sheamus versus Gunther that highly is if there's just a lack of a follow-up and it ends up not meaning anything in the long run, even for these two guys' careers. But no, it looks like we will at some point get another, at least one more Gunther Sheamus singles match.
Yeah, and who is gonna argue with that?
No,
Not
I won't.
yep, not me. Not on that list. So yeah, it certainly seems to be pointing that direction. It's not surprising. Most of these feuds these days last more than just a pay-per-view. And this really should not be any exception. And it continues Sheamus's streak of being one of the better wrestlers since the beginning of about the beginning of the pandemic era. Is that when he kind of started
Yeah.
kicking things off?
Well, somewhere in there, because he was gone for a lot of that period, too, for at least a little bit of that period, or towards the end of 2018, I think
Oh, yeah.
he was out of action. But no, yeah, ever since he came back, he has been on a roll. I mean, once again, if you look at the totality of his entire career, it's very good. He's very underrated. For what the impact he's had and the quality of his work, dating back pretty much to the start.
Oh,
So no,
yeah.
it's good to see it's good to see that man get that man getting the recognition he deserves and being able to have this, I guess we'd call it a late career renaissance and show of appreciation for him.
Yeah, and it would be really fun eventually if he did get another big championship run. Like I feel like he's one of those guys that could pull off a Christian like I don't know if you want to call it a one last time, but it does feel like he's done enough of a job here recently to maybe warrant that at some time in the future. When you only have one championship, though, it's kind of hard to get your hands around that. So, next up here on SmackDown, we got the Solo Sikoa introduction on SmackDown proper. How did you think this segment went?
It went well. It felt a little less, maybe more than a little less, without Roman Reigns present.
Yeah.
Which again, that's an issue. It's apparently gonna be a bigger issue as time rolls on. But no, Sami Zayn was funny. His interplay with the Usos is very good. Solo Sikoa, was able to, cut a short but good promo before Drew interrupted. Good stuff. Good start. But once again, it's moments like these are always going to miss the tribal chief.
Oh, yeah. There's a little gravitas that is missing when Roman Reigns isn't around. Or even someone that I had forgotten was fairly absent in recent proceedings, Paul Heyman.
Yeah, no, still no Paul Heyman. That's interesting, I guess, that he's staying off camera, whether he travels to events or not, and whether he's gaining or losing any steam in the new administration, I have no idea. But once again, in these moments, his presence is missed as well. You know, the Usos are good promos. Sami Zayn's a good promo. Solo Sikoa is a good promo for his experience level and what they let him do. But it's missing something, and these months that are going to go by without Roman Reigns being involved at all, especially with SmackDown, the Riot already being in the shape that it's in, and now SmackDown even being without Pat McAfee. Thank God for matches like that opener, I guess. Wow, I mean, it's...
I think you stumbled on a story that both of us had forgotten about. That is a news story that came out between the time that Jeremy and I recorded and this timeline here. Pat McAfee is on College Game Day, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
So that airs Saturday mornings, so he is off of SmackDown for the time being.
Yes, until the end of the year. Definitely a missed presence. The world does not need two more hours of Corey Graves.
Yeah, I was kind of hopeful that maybe they would introduce someone else so that Graves wasn't doing double duty anymore. Not the case. Honestly, if we went to Byron Saxton and Jimmy Smith, I might welcome the experiment. It might not work, but I would welcome that so that I didn't get a double dose of Corey Graves.
Yeah, I would not mind that. Once again, because without Graves, the Raw commentary team is simply innocuous and not annoying in any way. It's easy to turn out because Smith and Saxton are easy to turn out, to tune out.
They're pretty nondescript. I honestly wouldn't mind maybe a fresh voice because, Pat McAfee really will be, he will be missed. I think that all of us have said how much they've enjoyed his commentary and just the rejuvenation, especially that he's brought to Michael Cole, has been really nice. So, Pat, you will be missed. So, until next year, I suppose, at least. Happy trails. Raquel Rodriguez and Aaliyah get Gigi Dolin. All
right, let's not. Oh, that's right. Okay, so there is an important part to this.
And JC Jane in a tag team title match.
Yes, Gigi and Jane. I'm just going to completely ignore Raquel and Aaliyah's part in this. We'll talk about them later. But Gigi and JC getting the call up without Mandy Rose for the moment. And being brought up to lose. Not a fan of that.
Yeah, it's kind of a strange choice. Maybe it is just a one-off. I'm not sure. I wouldn't mind more shuffling between the rosters, even for short time periods or just for, again, one-off matches. They've kind of been on TV a couple of times, though, now. Yeah, not a big fan of them being the sacrificial lambs here if you have plans for them to be champions in, I would think, the somewhat near future.
I'm not sure about that near, but we shall see.
Yeah. Because, well, yeah. I'm not sure what they have. I guess they... I'm trying to figure out if they have a place in the new NXT at this juncture.
At this juncture, it's been beyond time to get that women's championship off of Mandy Rose and send her back up to the main roster. I don't know why they keep delaying it. And JC and Gigi, you know, they're not gonna get any more out of staying in NXT any longer. So it's definitely time. But they're just being brought up to SmackDown without much fanfare. And they lost their second match on SmackDown now. So, I'm not a huge fan of that. But we'll see where they go from here, and we'll see if what happens with Mandy Rose, because they've run through a lot of challengers down in NXT for her.
Oh.
I'm not sure what the end game is at this point.
Ever since she did not lose to Zoe Stark, that question has been in my head. Because Zoe Stark seemed to be the person in the story that they were telling that would finally beat Mandy Rose and she get kicked back upstairs. And then that win didn't happen. And there's not really anyone that I can think of off the top of my head that I'm like, oh yeah, they're the next big women's singles star. You know, they kind of already did the Roxanne Perez part. I suppose she could rebuild and go after the title, but that would, in my estimation, take a couple of months. Cora Jade probably isn't the right person to take the championship off of her.
No, I could. You could absolutely. Could maybe do it in a multi-person match.
Oh.
And then, because then you take the Cora Jade Roxanne Perez feud and make it for the title after that.
Yeah.
You can do that, but there's not a great answer right now.
Yeah, those are the only two women that pop off the top of my head as far as, even people that would be suitable as an opponent for Mandy Rose. You know? Because, yeah, they're just... The ladies' division still a little thin down there in NXT. Well, speaking of the women's division, I suppose we can talk about the main roster variety. Ronda Rousey back in ring action. She makes basically short work of five people.
Yeah. No. Not really. not really protecting any of the other four people or five people. What was a five? She was the fifth, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so it was four other people. We've got heel Ronda back. She's a killer. She's going after Liv Morgan. You know, once again, Liv Morgan still is the champion, but you know, by far the underdog. I don't know if she's escaping this one with the title.
Yeah, it seems like this is the end of the line for Liv Morgan.
If we've got killer heel Ronda back, You know, Liv Morgan's been done well with what she's been asked to do. They've certainly made some questionable creative choices, especially that SummerSlam finish did hurt her. But I still don't think that they see her that highly. And if we're gonna start to get set into WrestleMania mode, and we've got Ronda, you know, heating up Ronda as this killer heel, it's probably gonna be, you know, Ronda going into WrestleMania as women's champion.
I mean, there isn't a lot of reason to have Ronda Rousey on your roster if she's not in the championship hunt.
They did do something with Ronda and Shayna that implied that they might form a team and go after the tag titles.
Yeah, they have interacted a couple of times now on TV. Yeah.
So you might be able to get away with that.
Oh, yeah.
Especially if you've got Sasha and Naomi coming back, and you could do something there, a strong face team for them to go against. Because I mean, them versus Io and Dakota doesn't really make a lot of sense, you know, for the moment, but.
Yeah, I'd enjoy the match. Doesn't necessarily make a lot of sense.
Right. So, I mean, I guess there's a chance they're going to push Ronda, move Ronda into the tag team scene with Shayna. So Liv might live to fight another day.
In some ways, I wouldn't mind her getting a second run at some point to the championship if they really want to cement her as a champion. I'm not sure the WWE still seems to have a problem with babyface champions and keeping them viable.
Throughout their history, most of the majority of their history. It was all babyface champions. But lately, no.
Yeah, lately, it's been a disaster.
You're right. No, they can't keep a babyface likable. or through the title reign, or they botch them, you know. I mean, I guess we can move on to the...
Yeah.
There wasn't anything between the women's five-way and Drews versus Solo Sikoa, was there?
There was tag team match.
I guess the only thing important about that is, in a digital exclusive, Max Dupree made references that sounded like LA Knight might be coming back.
I did. Strangely enough, I did see that news. I did not see it on a digital. I did see it on the digital exclusive, actually, because since I did not tape SmackDown either, I did the YouTube version of it, and that was on there. So, yeah, I forgot I did actually catch that.
So I guess that part's interesting. I mean, there's been some humor in the Maximum Male Models stuff, but that's not translating to Mansoor and...
Massey.
Being taken seriously as a tag team and winning matches.
They could definitely use a change in gimmick.
Well, you know what? LA Knight was a Triple H guy. Vince is the one who didn't believe in him actually getting in the ring and wrestling at his age at this point in his career. Triple H is more likely to give him that chance.
Yeah, I mean, it. They have enough older wrestlers that I don't think he's going to get a Universal Championship run. Is he going to be a competent part of your professional wrestling roster? Yeah, yeah.
But you know what, though? I did not see him getting as over as a babyface as he did in NXT coming.
Oh.
He was really, really over as a babyface. You know, threw me for a loop, threw a lot of people for a loop, just how good he was in a babyface role, because he spent the majority of his career in a heel role.
Yeah.
He might get really over. If you give him the microphone, they give him that chance.
Yeah, that is definitely part of his game, that the age has either helped or kept good. His promos are usually pretty dialed in. Even the stuff with the Maximum Male Models, you can just, he has a good flair to himself that even that ridiculousness, I thought, carried fairly well. So, good for him. If he changes back, cool. If he also changes Massé and Mansoir back to...
Mansoir, that's how they're saying it. Yes, I never get that right.
It took me a while to remember that.
Mostly because I fast forward through Maximum Male Model segments.
But yeah, those guys could use a change of scenery themselves. Like this, because this was a Vince idea, correct? That's just kind of,
yes, definitely.
So I honestly, like, as much as I have kind of bagged on some of his late ones, this one kind of cracked me up. But like you said, like it hasn't done anything for anyone, really. And sometimes you just need to scrap an idea that isn't working for your talent and move on along. Yeah, so the next thing after that really was Drew McIntyre and Solo Sikoa to main event SmackDown. Yeah, I mean, I guess there isn't really much to say about this one. Any match that ends in a disqualification is a little bit of a throwaway match. I'm not surprised that the Street Profits are the ones coming out to help Drew McIntyre. If nothing else, for the fact that I believe it's a four-way match that they're having for the tag team championships and the Street Profits are involved. I'm not sure what other tag team really has a chance to go up against the Usos right now, even though the Street Profits is a little bit old.
It's the same match Braun Strowman interrupted last Monday. It's very strange that the team that's been getting the biggest push, the Viking Raiders, is not in this match. Unless they're going to interrupt this match and lay out everybody.
That would be pretty funny if that happened.
No, I mean, WWE has painted themselves into... The former management has painted them into a number of corners. The corner with the Usos being unified champion... and the corner, of course, with Roman Reigns being the undisputed champion.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how they unpaint their way out of this. So yeah, that four-way match is going to happen. I would not be surprised if something strange happens within that match. But yeah, the end of SmackDown was nothing Nothing too crazy. Solo Sikoa, you know, he did a pretty good job with against Drew McIntyre.
Yeah, Solo did a good job. Still not enough to make a great prognostication about his future. Oh. They're going for it with this cross stuff, and oh boy, is this black and white to color stuff going to get old really, really quickly. Yeah, special lighting and graphics whenever someone's on a screen has never worked. It's never lasted. It didn't last with Bray Wyatt. It didn't last with Kane when they did it with him in his first couple of matches in 97 or so. They're probably going to give up on this too, but and poor Drew. He was never going to be hotter than he was going into Clash at the Castle. And not pulling the trigger, I don't know what you do with him.
Yeah, because this is kind of a weird feud for him. If he beats Karrion Kross, it's almost, okay, yeah, that should happen.
Absolutely.
If he loses to him, it's probably some type of a groaner situation. I do not envy the choice on that one, because neither outcome is all that great, really. No matter who wins that one. And the lighting stuff is okay for an entrance. If you want to do it during that, cool. It within the context of a match or even a post-match brawl, I guess, if you want to call it that. Post-match struggle. Don't do that. Don't do that. You know, it's not doing anyone any favors. So just keep the camera the regular Kellers, and it'll all work out great, guys. Leading off Raw was Seth Rollins wearing the purple suit. What did you think of the suit there that Mr. Rollins was wearing?
It was I think it was subdued for Rollins' usual wardrobe. Honestly,
I agree with you. It was it was pretty tame. It was a pretty tame one. Even though I did like it, definitely seems like another feud that. While Seth Rollins is trying to move on, he does not seem to be truly ready to move on from this feud.
No. There's definitely another match coming. Probably something FalseCon Anywhere, some other type of anything goes match at Extreme Rules. I mean, Seth has his match next week with Bobby Lashley that I'm fairly certain Matt Riddle's not going to allow him to win.
Oh. I would think that he's going to cost him a championship opportunity at a minimum. How he's going to do that exactly, he could just show up at ringside and cause long enough of a distraction. But he's definitely going to end up costing Seth Rollins at least a portion of that match so that he can, you know, so that we can get some justification for the Rollins caving to the I'm not going to have a match with him stipulation that he went with on Raw this week. So, it is kind of weird, though, that they keep on putting some of these guys in situations where it seems like they might be feuding with two different groups. Matt Riddle, in that category, Judgment Day, mainly Finn Balor and Damian Priest, come out and try to recruit him to their side, and then swiftly fisticuffs happen, and we get an official match out of this segment.
Yeah, no, this was just a way to get, you know, a match between Matt Riddle and Finn Balor on the show. Yet another match that got time. And but Seth Rollins got involved in the finish, so that is definitely not over. And the Judgment Day did get a needed win.
Oh, yeah. Especially Finn Balor. Finn Balor has not had a whole lot of wins recently. What did you think of the Dominic Mysterio sit down video stuff?
Bless his heart, he's trying. No, I mean, he was never bred for this. It was just, it's gonna take a lot of work. I mean, this is at least maybe a little bit better presentation of him than him as a baby face, but there's still so much work here, and it all has to be done on television. in front of millions of people every week. You know, this kid's learning with training wheels.
Yeah, I do. I like the presentation a lot, with Rhea Ripley being his consigliere, or whatever his muse, maybe.
There's other things I could call it, but I won't here.
Yeah. There are certainly other things that you could throw in there, but they haven't really defined the relationship completely yet to imply too much, honestly.
No, it feels like they're scared to go all the way with what they're implying.
Yes.
Yeah, they don't want to do that. They don't want Dom all another with Rhea walking him down the ramp with a dog collar.
Yeah. They are definitely holding back at least a little bit on this one, and not really committing one way or the other to how this relationship is forming. But I do, again, like, the presentation is a little bit better. I'm not sure that, you know, a lot of people are going to look good in a match with Edge.
Yeah, that was probably Dominic's, maybe his second best singles match after the first match of his entire career with Seth Rollins. But at the end of the day, once again, it was so much Edge. You know, Edge absolutely. Okay, since we're on the subject, I guess we're skipping to the main event.
Well, yeah, I mean, it kind of sticks with the story, so as well.
Yeah, so, yeah. No, Edge, Terry, Dominic, was good of a match as Dominic's going to have at this stage in his career. You know, in the end, Rey Mysterio gets involved, but he can't physically lay a kind of hand on his own son, so he gets taken out pretty easily by Damian Priest, and then they all beat Edge down, and Dominic beats Edge's already injured knee with a chair. I guess it's last week, but now I really, really think Edge is going to be gone for a little while.
Yeah, it would seem like he's going to be taking a break. They're coming back from two kind of major incidences would be a bit much, especially with the whole steel chair situation involved with the most recent one.
And I even forgot about Finn Balor coming off the top rope with the double stomp to the knee as well. That should definitely be an injury angle. That puts someone out for a little bit.
Yep. That seems at least like a 2-monther to me. Maybe you do a month and a half, I suppose, depending upon if you want them back for a pay-per-view or not. But, you know, hey, decide amongst yourselves. I don't really care. At least a couple of weeks off works for me. What else here happened on... the next thing up, really, we had alluded to it earlier, Raquel Rodriguez and Aaliyah defend the Women's Tag Team Championships against Io Sky and Dakota Kai, and not too surprisingly, Damage Control brings home the gold, so all is right with the world in the Women's Tag Team Division?
Yeah, I mean, there was no point to them losing in the first place. They just delayed the inevitable. You know, Raquel and Aaliyah didn't get a lick over. You know, they both still have issues. Aaliyah shouldn't have issues because she's been around for so long, but she still looks. I don't know how many times I have to say the same. We go on the same rant about Aaliyah. It's just mind-boggling how poor she is at this after all this time. Raquel is still a little green around the edges. Definitely not being presented to her best. You can tell that she's not a smiling, bubbly person in real life. You can tell that she's not comfortable. Being as a baby face. Or at least as a baby face that has to smile all the time.
That's been an interesting one that I thought would be an automatic change after Triple H took over. Not that she needs to turn into mean scowling woman right off the hop. I figured this smiling would at least take something of a back seat to a little more seriousness at least.
But good that Io and Dakota finally got the tag titles and did it in dominant fashion. So that's all well and good right there.
Yeah, it always does help to kick out of the finisher that did you in the first time around, and I can't remember.
You mean a roll up?
Yeah, the roll up.
Aaliyah's finisher.
Yep. Good enough as far as I'm concerned.
Whatever. It's fine. Glad they got the women's tag titles. Now let's move on.
Yep. Agreed. It is definitely time to move on. Another match that got plenty of time. Chad Gable, Johnny Gargano back in a wrestling ring. What did you think of this one?
I mean, good quality match. Can't say it totally was holding my interest for as long as it went.
Oh.
Do you have the time on it?
13:50.
13:50? Really? That's it?
I would have thought it was a little bit longer than that myself.
I would have thought it went longer too, so maybe I'll strike down some of my phrase there, because that match felt like it was going on a really, really long time. And they were losing me at points. I mean, once again, it was a well-wrestled match, but once again, it's these long matches with good work rate can get numbing after a while. If there's nothing storyline wise or greater interest wise at play. I mean,
yeah,
rising and there, above.
Yeah, there wasn't anything extra interesting about this match. Like, it was two good wrestlers. There was a lot of mat wrestling. I think that that kind of didn't make
it. Yeah,
slows things down, yeah. Yeah, I don't think, even though they both do it well, I still think that they maybe over-relied on that. And, yeah, I think that that kind of slowed the pace. Because I'm with you, like, I guess I wasn't as glued to the TV as maybe I would have expected to after not having 9+ months of Johnny Gargano in my life. So, good win for him. Good way to, for the most part, tell his story. And, you know, we move along from here. Poor Chad Gable and Otis are going to be eating some L's left and right. Austin Theory comes out after the match. And, of course, he rips his old mentor. One Kevin Owens, though, answers the many complaints of Austin Theory. What?
Yes, he does, and he does his WWE version of John Moxley's promo from Dynamite. Hey, let's. Maybe it was a coincidence that Kevin Owens cuts this kind of a fired up promo, but I don't know. It feels too coincidental that he. That Kevin Owens does the fired up promo about what it means to be a top guy, what it means to be a future of the company, to be a face of the company, and all that. It felt very on the nose. Once again, Kevin Owens has been on fire on the microphone lately, without a doubt.
Yeah,
you know, he has completely switched. And switch that gear, switch that, you know, that light switch has gone on from heel to face, and he can do the working man's rap promo is almost as good as anyone. As I said before, almost as good as anyone who's ever walked into a ring. You know, he knows how to fire people up and get them feeling like they could run through a wall.
Yeah, he is great at doing that, and this segment was just another one in many in which he proved his mic skills. I was wondering. I'm like, ooh, Austin Theory did look like he got a pretty solid punch to the nose there. I wonder if that's going to cause any problems moving forward.
I haven't heard anything about him being legitimately hurt beyond a bloody nose, so.
Oh.
So soon he'll be fine.
Fair. Interesting story here with Bianca Belair and Sonya Deville.
I didn't find it the least bit interesting.
Well, I'm kind of interested. It wasn't really the match itself. The Corey Graves contention, one of the few things that honestly caught my attention in the announcing this week, about him trying to sell Bianca's mentality that she's a little too... in her own head about Bayley pinning her. I feel like they're going to continue that angle, and I feel like that's just the beginning of it. Like, that they're kind of laying the groundwork for how they're going to attack this this storyline.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, I thought the match went too long, and the promo afterward with Bianca and Bayley was good. But then it just turned into the same 3-on-3 brawl we would have for the last month.
No,
it may have behooved them more to say that Asuka and Alexa aren't in the building and, you know, have a major beatdown on Bianca than to have Damage Control coming out of the losing end of a fair fight and running away again.
Oh. Yeah. I could see that being a good course of action. But we did not get that. Not a whole lot more to talk about on Raw. There definitely is not a lot to talk about the Omos 2-on-1 match, unless you have something to say about that.
No, I mean, it does feel like that they want to heat Omos up enough for something. Don't know what that would be. But Triple H has not been throwing things out there for no reason.
Oh,
during his reign so far, so it does feel like they want to put Omos in a big match down the line.
Yeah, I mean, if nothing else, I could see him as being Braun Strowman fodder at some juncture.
That could be possible.
And Triple H has always loved the enhancement talent match.
Yes.
So, not surprised to see someone like Omos finish featured in this type of light. We kind of already talked about the Lashley and Seth Rollins stuff. The only other thing to talk about is The Miz still being stalked.
Still being stalked at home. Yes, this might be my favorite thing in all of wrestling right now. Don't judge me. This whole thing is hilarious. It's perfect camp. It's perfect for The Miz to play off of. You know.
Yes.
He's Loomis is stalking Miz at home now.
Yeah, he's in his actual house drawing cartoons.
But I prefer the more subtle stuff of him outside the window. Whenever the camera would pan over to one of the windows, he's and no one notices he's there.
Oh man, that has been a lot of good fun stuff for the Miz and for again somehow Dexter Loomis mute. Still getting a lot of TV time and a lot of, what I would probably traditionally call promo time. although obviously he is not producing any promo. anything else to talk about?
I think we're good here.
Okie dokie. It was a quiet storyline week for, or outside the ring talk for wrestling. As I did mention at the top of the show, I went traveling this past weekend. When I always go to my parents' place, I stop in at this little beer place right near their house that has a bunch of good Pennsylvania beers there. This is from a very trusty brand that I get there when I stop in. It's New Trail Brewing Zombies Are People Too. And I got it because it's a pumpkin ale, baby, and it's that time of the year. I say pumpkin beers open season, middle of September through October and November. I was more than happy to pick that one up. There is a companion beer that will be making an appearance, but This pumpkin ale, a little bit surprisingly enough, not surprised to see pumpkin spices and vanilla in there. A little bit of maple syrup really gives it a different sweetness that I have not tasted before in a pumpkin ale. And I do like that quite a bit. So, yeah, if you happen to be in Pennsylvania, I believe, where are they? Yeah, Williamsport, Pennsylvania. So they are dead central Pennsylvania. If you happen to be in that area or somewhere surrounding, pick up their beers. They are very tasty. New Trail Brewing, that is. Suggestion from @DeFrango11. My partner in crime tonight was @StuntCali. The brand is @StuntGranny. Rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. Download us at any number of locations, whether it's Spotify, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, or Google. Have a good night, grandkids.
Later.